Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Quilt Fiction Podcast, where our motto is Quilt, Read, Repeat. I'm your host, Frances O'Rourke Dow. For those of you who don't know me, I'm a novelist who writes about quilts, a children's book author, and a quilt journalist. For more about my writing life, you can check out my author website, francesdow.com. For more about quilt fiction, go to quiltfiction.com. I'm thrilled to announce this episode's sponsor is String and Story, a quilting education company with a mission to guide more quilters around the world to quilt with confidence. Holly Ann Knight, String and Story's fearless leader, has put together an amazing fat quarter bundle with a great Aurifil thread collection for one lucky winner. Want to see it? If you get the Quilt Fiction newsletter, you'll find a photo in this month's missive. Don't get the newsletter? Sign up at quiltfiction.com. Our other giveaway this month? Well, since we'll be visiting with author Jennifer Cheverini, how about a copy of her newest novel, The Museum of Lost Quilts? Here's a description. Summer Sullivan, the youngest founding member of Elm Creek Quilts, has spent the last 2 years pursuing a master's degree in history at the University of Chicago. Her unexpected return home to the celebrated quilters' retreat is met with delight, but also concerns from her mother, Gwen, her best friend, Sarah, master quilter, Sylvia, and her other colleagues, and rightly so. Stymied by writer's block, Summer hasn't finished her thesis, and she can't graduate until she does. Elm Creek Manor offers respite while Summer struggles to meet her extended deadline. She finds welcome distraction in organizing an exhibit of antique quilts as a fundraiser to renovate Union Hall, the 1863 Greek Revival headquarters of the Waterford Historical Society. But Summer's research uncovers startling facts about Waterford's past, prompting unsettling questions about racism, economic injustice, and political corruption within their community, past and present. As Summer's work progresses, quilt lovers and history buffs praise the growing collection, but affronted local leaders demand that she remove all references to Waterford's troubled history. As controversy threatens the exhibit's success, Summer fears that her pursuit of the truth might cost the Waterford Historical Society their last chance to save Union Hall. Her only hope is to rally the quilting community to her cause. As a lucky reader of an advance review copy, I can tell you this is a great addition to the Elm Creek Quilter series. It is truly one of my favorites. So, again, we've got two great giveaways this month, the String and Story Bundle and Jennifer Cheverini's latest, The Museum of Lost Quilts. The deadline to enter is May 15th, 2024. By the way, The Museum of Lost Quilts comes out next Tuesday, April 30th. If you are a big Jennifer Cheverini fan and can't wait to see if you win the copy via the giveaway, do the woman a favor and pre-order her book. Okay, you're going to hear a lot about this in the forthcoming interview. The more pre-orders a book gets, the more excited Amazon gets, and they'll start recommending the book near and far. It really does help with the sales. Okay, I'll come back after the interview and chat a bit, but I do want to get to it. Here is a quick bio of Jennifer for those of you who don't know her. Jennifer Cheverini is the New York Times best-selling author of 33 novels, including acclaimed historical fiction and the beloved Elm Creek Quilt series. She has also written 7 quilt pattern books inspired by her novels. A graduate of the University of Notre Dame and the University of Chicago, she lives with her husband and 2 sons in Madison, Wisconsin. You guys, I think you're really going to enjoy this interview. I cannot tell you how much fun I had talking with Jennifer, and I think you're going to have a lot of fun listening to what she has to say about books, quilts, and everything in between. I don't even know what that means, but it's a good time. Let's listen. Welcome, Jennifer Chiaverini, to the Quilt Fiction Podcast. We are thrilled to have you. This is big. This is exciting. Everyone I tell is just over the moon. And when then I tell them that I already have a copy of your new book, The Museum of Lost Quilts, which I don't know if that's going to show up, they're incredibly jealous. And I'm actually, I've been worried about my emotional safety. But it's a wonderful book. And and people could not be more excited. And so my first question, it's been a while since we spent time at the Elm Creek Manor. What brought you back?
Well, two things. First, it's the 25th, well, 2024 marks the 25th anniversary of the launch of the Elm Creek Quilt Series with the 1999 publication of The Quilter's Apprentice. So it seemed like a perfect time to go back and, you know, catch everybody up on what the characters have been doing and just to revisit this wonderful community of quilters again. But I think what really prompted me most of all was when I mentioned another book on social media, someone I did not know, a fan, wrote, "This sounds lovely, but I just want to read one more Elm Creek Quilts novel before I die." And I was like, how much time do I have? You know, it was like, are we talking about an imminent demise? Or because, you know, it takes me 2 years to do these. I didn't ask her any of these questions, but I thought, you know, maybe it is time, because the previous book was in 2019 mm-hmm. with the Christmas Boutique. Right. And I thought, you know, it has been a while since I've done an Elm Creek Quilts novel. So with the, you know, with this, what might have been a deathbed wish, I don't know. And the anniversary kind of coinciding, I thought it would be a great time to go and treat readers to another installment in the series.
Yeah. Well, and as you know, everyone's incredibly excited about it. And I realized, and I
didn't. You know what? I did not know that.
Did you not know that.
So right, well, you're privy to information. I am not. So I'm
on the street, Jennifer. We have the Quilt Fiction Podcast has a Facebook group, and it's a lovely, lovely group. And and so when I got the ARC, I was like, you know, just sort of,
yeah,
I did it. But I was like, look what
a little gloating.
I was gloating a little bit. I was, you know, but but everyone was just like, you know, I was just
so wonderful,
thrilled. And
I'm so glad to hear that.
And let's, it's coming out, what is the actual pub date? Is it the 19th?
April 30th.
April
30th.
2024. Okay.
Yes.
Okay. We are recording this in March, but the podcast episode will come out in April. So everyone can pre-order. And everyone pre-order, because that's really good.
Please do.
Yeah, that gets sellers very excited to carry the book, which they will be anyway, but it also bumps it up on Amazon and all kinds of good things. So pre-order. Okay, let's see. I want to go back way back in time, because as you mentioned, we are celebrating 25 years of the Elm Creek Quilters. Why'd you write the first one?
Well, as a writer yourself, maybe you got the advice I received when I was a young writer just starting out. Everyone told me, write what you know. And since I was and still am a quilter, and I just loved everything about the art of quilt making and the folklore, and then especially the quilting community, you know, all the warmth and the sharing and the kindness and the generosity. And the inside jokes and some of the little rivalries, all of that. Since I love that so much, I wanted to capture that in fiction. And I did this for two audiences. First of all, I thought that my quilting friends would love seeing their world and the art form that they love so much portrayed by an insider, you know, accurately and without any of the stereotypes. that unfortunately sometimes accompany quilters. For some reason, there's a stereotype that we are all so patient. You know, we just are so patient. I'm not very patient. Quilting, I don't think, is about patience. It's about persistence. Mm-hmm. It's about sticking with something to see it from the beginning through completion, which is actually something, you know, you need as a writer as well. Right. So I wanted to capture the quilting world for my fellow quilters. But I also wanted to write for non-quilters to give them insight into the quilting world so that they could maybe understand their quilting friends a little bit better, understand some of our obsessions, you know, and just some of the things that make us tick. So mm-hmm. I wrote The Quilter's Apprentice and thinking that I, you know, wanting to write about something that I love in this world that I knew. And then I wrote The Quilter's Apprentice, and I just thought after that I would move on to other books on subjects of other things that interest me and fascinate me. But I was very fortunate that The Quilter's Apprentice was well received and readers wanted a sequel. So I thought, you know, there are all those characters. The first book featured Sarah and Sylvia. Mm-hmm. Sylvia, the master quilter, passing on her knowledge to Sarah, her young friend. But there were all these other quilters who were a part of their quilting bee that I thought, you know, I'd like to delve into their lives a little bit more. Mm-hmm. So I wrote Round Robin so that I could explore their lives and their relationships and what had drawn them to quilting. So I had a book and its sequel. But then after that book came out in 2000, I started hearing from a lot of readers. Sometimes it was on book tour in person. Sometimes it was through email. And readers would tell me, you know, I love these two books and I would love to go to Elm Creek Quilt Camp, but I can't find it online. Every time I look for it, the only website I find is yours. So where can I go to register for Elm Creek Quilt Camp? And then I would have the unhappy duty to tell them that it's fictional and I just made it up. And, you know, then I would have to deal with some very sad faces and tearful, we understand. But then some people would tell me, oh, well, you should build Elm Creek Quilt. Now, lacking a enormous mansion in central Pennsylvania and the several million dollars that would be required to set this sort of thing up, and also the skill to be able to, I'm a writer, I can tell you a story about a quilt camp that is not the same skill set as running one. So mm-hmm. since that was not going to happen, and I'm so sorry that it's not going to happen, I thought, well, what is the next best thing I can do? And I realized, well, that would be letting my readers experience quilt camp through the eyes of my characters. So I wrote The Cross Country Quilters. Mm-hmm. And in this book, I introduced five new characters who aren't running the quilt camp like my Elm Creek quilters. They come to quilt camp and they become fast friends during that really special week. And then the story traces them as they go their separate ways across the country, hence the name of their group. And it follows them through the year until they reunite the following summer at quilt camp. And they are working on a project together, you know, long distance, just they're each supposed to piece a block for a sampler. And so it was while I was writing this book that I realized, oh, I guess I'm writing a series. So since this maybe explains why the Elm Creek Quilt series doesn't really follow always the traditional series format. Sometimes, just like most series, the new book will pick up where the previous book left off and it will just continue the story in a linear fashion. But not always. Sometimes, since I love American history, I love all kinds of history, sometimes I will delve back into the past and you'll see the Elm Creek Valley in, say, the antebellum era. Or I will focus a story on one of Sylvia's ancestors. And we'll see a little slice of the quilting world from that perspective. So since I wasn't locked into the traditional series format, it really gave me a lot of opportunities to explore other kinds of writing mm-hmm. dual timeline narratives, historical fiction, as well as contemporary fiction, and all kinds of different structures. And I really did, it gave me so much more creative fulfillment that I really just kept going on. Once I realized I was writing a series, I just kind of ran with it.
Well, you did. And I really was aware of this reading the new book, which the Museum of Lost Quilts, pre-order it. I really had the sense that, first of all, that you were trying to give the reader the pleasure of being at quilt camp. There's a lot of food talk. There is a lot of food in this book. And no one seems to gain any weight. They just eat and have a fabulous time. But there, and summer
is fiction
always,
wonderful.
It's so nice that way. And summer's always wandering through the kitchen. She's always coming in from doing her research, and there's just something wonderful to eat, or you know, or that's been, a plate has been saved for her. But it really does. You feel like you are taking us through the whole experience. We're not really in the classes, but the really lovely traditions of quilt camp. You know, we experience those in a way that's wonderful. And I think anybody who has done any kind of retreat or just spent time with their quilting friends, there is such a great, I don't know, I think quilt, I go to quilt guilds, and my mother's in a guild in Louisville, and it's always just the same. Everyone's laughing, you know, and there's just an experience that we all love this craft. And we understand
the community
and the community. And it is, for so many people, a really important community. So anyway, so it's lovely to experience that in this book. And I'm
so glad you felt that way.
I'm like, I'm hungry. That I really was my cook. But
I know. Yes. At Elm Creek Manor, there is a very, very skilled chef, Anna. She was introduced in Circle of Quilters when she originally applied to be a quilting instructor, but they found an even better role for her because she is a professional chef, and she was very happy to take it on. She didn't even know that was an option when she applied to be a quilt instructor. So it's a lot of fun to just dream up all these wonderful foods that Anna makes. And isn't that the dream, though, to have someone take care of all the cooking for you so you can just quilt and hang out with your friends?
Yes. Well, and I would think, too, that I understand why. I'm a little heartbroken about the people. Like, where is this place? I want to go. And of course, we all do.
I know.
Finding out. No. But,
you know what is really cool? One of the outcomes of writing this series that I never could have imagined when I first started writing the first novel in 1996, that's when I first started writing it.
Mm-hmm.
People have told me that they were inspired by the Elm Creek Quilts novels to actually start quilting retreats of their own. I honestly, it never occurred to me that people would, and that's one of the most amazing things about being a writer, is that I will write a story meaning to share this little experience with my readers, and then they will take it and they will do all kinds of amazing creative things with it on their own. Some people have decided to start to learn to quilt. You know, they love the book and they decided that they wanted to learn to quilt too, or they started their own business. And I just think that is so amazing. And I think it shows that the people who are drawn to my books also are creative people in their own right.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just to think that I had any part in inspiring all these wonderful creative works. It's very gratifying and very humbling to me to know that just by wanting to tell a story and to offer people warmth and comfort and enjoyment, they just launched something entirely new, all their own, that I never could have anticipated.
Oh, that's really wonderful. And I was thinking that anyone who's read the books, I was thinking about these people who are like, oh, is there this retreat after reading the books? And I was reminded of this reading the Museum of Lost Quilts. It's like, they work really hard. These women, they work so hard. I want to be on the other end of it. So I understand that desire. There's no way.
Well, it's a lot to do. classes to organize, all the scheduling, registration, all the work. But you know what? We can enjoy the books without having to do all that.
Without having to do that. That's just a lovely thing. Well, I want to talk a little bit.
But they like to do it.
They like
the characters in the book clearly, love to do that work.
They get so much meaning out of doing that. It's like almost like a muscle that they have. So in this new book, it focuses on Summer, the youngest of the quilters, and she is doing she's investigating quilt. She is and she's really doing this deep dive into quilt history. And I loved it. I loved reading the descriptions that she writes for the quilts, some of which are actually present, and some which are in fact lost and perhaps to for all time. But it's really fascinating quilt history. And I thought, is Summer living out a secret dream of yours to just be a quilt? I mean, you are a quilt historian.
Well, Summer has, she was there from the very beginning, from the Quilter's Apprentice, but in recent times, she has actually left Elm Creek Quilt Camp, and she has gone to pursue another dream, another goal, I should say, to earn her PhD in history. Her mother has a PhD and she's a scholar, and Summer kind of always saw that, well, that was what she was going to do when she grew up too. But she has run into some trouble in graduate school. She's struggling a little bit with writer's block. And so she has returned for the summer to Elm Creek Manor to hopefully find, you know, in the company of her friends in this wonderful place dedicated to creativity, to find her inspiration so that she can work through that writer's block and complete her master's degree so that she can continue on in her studies. But in the meantime, while she is at Elm Creek Manor struggling with her thesis, her friend Agnes, one of the other founding Elm Creek quilters, has, you know, I found the perfect job for you, Summer, something to keep you occupied while you're and give you some distraction. And at Union Hall, the Waterford Historical Society is trying to launch a capital campaign to raise money for much needed improvements to that amazing historic building in downtown Waterford, which we first saw in The Union Quilters, a previous novel. So Agnes's idea is to set up a quilt exhibit of quilts that from the area that played some kind of significant role in local history. And this is the perfect job for Summer to organize this exhibit because she's an expert quilter and she is also a trained historian. So she sets about trying to locate local quilts that played some kind of role in history. And of course, her friends, Sylvia and Agnes and the other Elm Creek quilters are a great starting point because they know a lot about local history, having experienced so much of it. And so Summer sets about trying to find some of these quilts and then writing up these quilt descriptions and for the object labels. And, you know, as she's going through and discovering these quilts, she does a lot of exciting, well, I find it exciting, historical research in the library. Maybe not everybody would want to do historical research all day long, but it actually is something that I enjoy. And so, yeah, Summer is embarking on an activity that I myself do enjoy actually quite a lot, doing that historical detective work. Mm-hmm. And you probably, if you've read my historical fiction or the Elm Creek Quilts novels that are also historical fiction, then you probably figured out that I actually enjoy doing historical research.
Yeah.
And my first job was in a library. My first real job in high school and in college was working at my local city library. And so, you know, that was something, and I absolutely adore libraries. I love libraries so much.
Yeah.
That shows up, you'll find a lot of libraries in all of my books. There's kind of a a through line of let's go to the library, and off they go and find answers to all of their questions.
So. I have to say something. This is so funny because you're talking, well, Summer does this and she writes up all these. It's like, but you're actually the one who wrote up all this. It's with
yes,
the
that's
tables
true.
And that. So that was Summer, but that was Summer channeling you. Did you love that part of the process of describing these quotes?
Yeah, I thought it was a lot of fun. Yeah, so it was like I was writing fictional nonfiction. If that, so I was writing the history of a quilt. So I had to write it as a historical artifact, and yet it was fictional entirely. So yeah, I had to, you know, I had to kind of juggle two genres there, I suppose.
It was great, and they felt very real. I mean, I wondered, are you in possession of those?
But it also had to be what would Summer have written, not what I would have written. Yeah. So it had to be in Summer's voice too.
Yeah, but she's pretty smart. She knows a lot.
So
you touched on this very briefly, but I want to talk about it some more because it's fascinating because you're working in a series and you went with one of the books, and let me see, I've got it here. I can't remember. You've gone forward in time. You wrote a book set in, which book was that? Excuse, forgive me for
the Wedding Quilt.
That was set in the future. The future, which is like so.
And here we are.
And here we are in the future. And you
are now in the future.
But I thought, first of all, it was fascinating. And there is a note at the end of the novel, which you talk about that. But I was curious about, because, okay, so I don't know why. Because
can I explain?
Explain
well,
the future.
Your question first.
What was interesting to me, because I'm not that bright. You know, I just read along. I'm reading the story and enjoying it and thinking, I wish Anna was my chef, et cetera, et cetera. And I'm following. And there's a little thing as I'm going along, I'm like, why is Summer spends so much time with microfiche? Does Summer know about newspapers.com? And then suddenly it dawned on me.
I do. Believe me, I love newspapers.com.
Which makes sense because Summer is not, you know, in her, what would she be now? In her 30s? She's still, you know.
Beyond her 30s.
So it's
as she'd be in her 40s or 50s. I'd have to do the math. But yeah, Summer was born in the early 70s.
Yeah. Oh my goodness. So, yeah. So anyway, but I'm just tootling along going, if someone should tell her about smartphones and the internet. And then it dawned on me.
Why doesn't she Google something?
Why doesn't she Google? She is. No wonder she's so frustrated with her master's thesis. She doesn't know how to. And that's when it dawned on me. We are not in 2024, 2022.
Right. And I do mention when she moved to Waterford, and that places the novel.
You did
that should place the novel in time.
It's on me, but there are other with the.
It is there. I did mention that. So, it is in the novel. What the year that she moved there, and I do mention, you know, Sylvia in World War II. So, you know, there are those things, those placeholder dates and
I was,
things, you know, so, so this novel. Yeah. Well, yes. Yeah, so it is given in the book, but you know, if you're zooming along and you're caught up in the story, maybe. Yeah. But it's there. It's there. But it's set in 2004. The Museum of Lost Quilts is set in 2004. That's about a year and a half after the previous book, which The Christmas Boutique, which was set in December of 2003. Okay. Now, I didn't set the novel in the past. I am picking up the series where I left off.
Right.
So, it takes me about 2 years to write each book. So even from the very beginning, my timeline and our timeline of, you know, in this universe, in this reality that we share, our timeline is moving along much faster than the timeline in the world of Elm Creek Quilts. You know, if one book picks up where the previous one left off, you know, and that book covers 3 months, well, that's 3 months, but in our timeline, 2 years has passed. Yes. So, you know, it's not that I am writing, although I guess technically this book is historical fiction of a sort. It's just that I'm continuing where I left off. So in part, that's because if I had set, well, it would have been impossible to set the Museum of Lost Quilts in 2024 because Sylvia was born in 1920. So she would be 104 right now, in which case she's probably not likely to still be with us. So, you know,
they're quite so active in the running of the,
why, you know, so the timeline of the Elm Creek Quilters, you know, they are, you know, time is proceeding with them at a normal pace. It's going faster for us because it takes me 2 years to write a book. And also I took some of those years off to write other stories. So if you're asking me to move ahead all those years, you're asking me to do away with Sylvia and Agnes and a bunch of them. Yeah, so I don't think you want me to do that. So, but getting back to the wedding quilt, when I wrote the wedding quilt, I thought that was going to be the last book in the series. And so I thought I needed to wrap everything up. So I did project ahead to the future, which was the future when I wrote the book. Mm-hmm. It is no longer the future. Things have not turned out the way that I thought they were going to turn out. So, or the way I hoped they would turn out in our timeline. So as I say in the author's note in the Museum of Lost Quilts, you can kind of just pretend that, or you can think of the wedding quilt as an alternative timeline or a dream sequence. But in order to continue the series, I have to disregard some of those timelines because they didn't happen. You know, we have not solved the climate crisis. I did not predict the COVID-19 pandemic. But, you know, if you read The Quilter's Legacy, you know, I knew all about global pandemics. I wrote about the Spanish flu in that book. So, you know, I knew it could happen, but I didn't know when it was going to happen. So you just kind of, I'm not saying don't read it. Go ahead and read it, but know that it's a dream sequence.
There you go.
It's alternative history in the Elm Creek Quilts world.
Well, that's and a really not everything. Way of looking at it.
Sorry?
I said that's Pardon such me? A fun way of looking at it. It's alternative history. It could have turned out this way.
Maybe it will.
Maybe it will.
Maybe things will turn out that way. But it's kind of a dream sequence. So I think I might have to write a book where Sarah wakes up and says, oh, I just had the strangest dream. I dreamed that all this stuff was happening. And then her husband can look at her and say, well, that didn't happen. It's only 2004, honey. But I probably won't do that.
Well, okay. And that does beg the question. Do you think at this point, is the door open for more Elm Creek Quilters books?
Yes, the door is open. There will be at least one more Elm Creek Quilts novel after this one. But I always say, you know, I can write whatever I want. I can't necessarily publish everything I want. So I do have to have, I have to have a contract, to put it bluntly. I can write it, but And I do hope that I will be able to share these stories with my readers, especially if they embrace the Museum of Lost Quilts and want more. Mm-hmm. You know, if readers embrace this one, it will go a long way to convincing a publisher to let me continue to write more books in the series. Yeah. So, you know, it's a lot of it is up to the readers.
Yeah. So pre-order everyone, I think. That'll just be our
you heard her
thread.
You know,
yes.
Frances said it. You got to listen to Frances.
Yes. And it really does make a difference. I don't know that people always understand that, but it really does. What was the.
You know what? I've been in the publishing industry for a long time. I've been publishing books, and there's so much about the world of publishing that remains a mystery to me. So I don't expect readers to understand all the ins and outs, but it's true. pre-ordering a novel in hardcover, if it's a hardcover original, that goes a long way to convincing a publisher that this is a book that they should promote and they should make sure it gets in bookstores and libraries.
Yeah. So there you have it. And publishing has changed so much since when you first started publishing and I started publishing.
Yes, it has.
Yes, children's fiction in 2000. And there, it's so, so different. Tell me, tell all of us, what was the best part of returning to the series? Because it's been a few years. And what was the most difficult part?
Oh, I think the best part was just going back and, you know, revisiting Elm Creek Manor and getting to, you know, reuniting with all of these characters. And, you know, and in the process of doing that, reminding myself why this series has meant so much to so many people around the world. You know, it's like, so that's, you know, I understood it. Like when I posted on social media, hey, there's going to be a new book coming out. The readers' comments were, oh, I've missed my friends. Mm-hmm. I've missed my community. And it was like, well, I didn't really realize how much readers wanted to go back to this world. Yeah. And when I went back to the books to kind of go through them and remind myself, okay, now, what kind of car did she drive? And where did I say her apartment was? Because I want to try to make the, you know, I want to avoid continuity errors. Mm-hmm. So in going through the books, I was reminded of the warmth and the community and the celebration of women's relationships and women's friendships and the art of quilting. And so it was wonderful to get back in touch with that and to see that is why people wanted more of these books. Mm-hmm. They wanted to go back into this world where friendship is paramount and people are accepted unconditionally. Yeah. The outsider, the newcomer is welcomed in, you know, into this world. I thought that it was wonderful to be reminded of that. And so I hope that readers will get a sense of that when they're reading the book, that they're going back to this place that they love among these people that they've come to think of as friends. And I hope they will have that sense of a homecoming and reuniting with a community that really is always there for them in the pages of these stories.
Yeah. It's also a place where women's work matters, and not just in the present, but of course you do, that there's so much historical fiction, even in the contemporary novels. You know, we go back in time, which is lovely. And that was an interesting thing too about reading this, is you're reminded of older stories and not just, you know, what happened and, you know, with the Elm Creek quilters, but the history of the manor, Sylvia's family history. That was kind of fascinating too, that there was kind of a, you know, which, and it is an alternate history that you've created. And yet, you know, it's like, oh yeah, I remember that, or that, you know, that was a funny, interesting thing to revisit those stories as well.
And I think that's probably one of the most difficult things about continuing a series so many books along the way, is that I have this difficult balancing act of, you know, of addressing readers who have read the previous 21 novels, maybe multiple times, and know all the ins and outs, and that those other readers for whom this will be the first Elm Creek Quilts novel they've ever read.
Yeah.
Something about the title appeals to them, or they love the cover or something, and or they don't know it's in a series, and they pick up the Museum of Lost Quilts or The Christmas Boutique or any of the later novels, and they want to jump right in. So I have to make sure that they understand what's going on and they're not lost and they're not like, wait a minute, now who is this lady and why is she living in this big house? So, you know, I really have to try to thread the needle, if you'll forgive me a quilting metaphor, for, you know, a set. You'll always forgive quilting metaphors. Oh, me too. And, but, you know, of satisfying longtime readers who know all of this, but also not excluding the newcomer, because right. I always want to invite the newcomer in and make them feel like, yes, they belong here too. Whether it's in a quilting bee or if it's in the pages of my book, I want everyone to feel that they're welcome. And mm-hmm. that means describing Elm Creek Manor again, even right. though it's familiar to people who've read all 21 books, the previous 21 books, or, you know, this is who Sylvia is. This is who Andrew is. This is why Sylvia was gone for 50 years. So it is, you know, so I think, you know, so if you have already know why Sylvia was gone from Elm Creek Manor for 50 years, then you can say, yes, that's right. That's that familiar story that I love so much.
Right.
And allow other readers to get caught up, you know, because I do have those two different audiences. Right. Some people are going to be meeting Sylvia for the very first time in this book, and I want them there. I want them to feel like they are welcome as Elm Creek Quilts readers too.
Yeah. Well, you do a good job in this book because you bring Summer in a cab, you know, and so you're bringing us with her. And of course, it's familiar to her, but but nonetheless, it's like she's like, oh, you know, she's having that perhaps the same experience that your longtime reader has. Oh, I'm coming home.
I'm coming
to this place.
Right, because she's been away for a while.
Yeah. So that's I thought you did that very nicely.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. I hope the majority of readers agree with you. I know, you know, it's impossible to please everyone, but you know, I do try.
I thought that was very graceful to have us experience Summer's homecoming, and then that was ours as well. But also the newcomer that also gets to, you know, understand what's happening, and they're seeing it for the first time, but that's okay. They understand through Summer's eyes what they're seeing. So you have made quite a career as a historical fiction writer, which it should not be a surprise because there is so much historical fiction. So first of all, have you found that significantly different from writing the Elm Creek Manor stories, or is it the process is the process?
You know, not really, because yeah. I've really been bringing history, women's roles in history, and quilt history into the novels really from the very beginning. You know, even in The Quilter's Apprentice, we see, you know, the early 20th century when Sylvia is sharing stories of her childhood and her time as a bride on the World War II home front. So even then, in Sylvia's first person stories, her reminiscences that she shares with Sarah, there's historical fiction right there in The Quilter's Apprentice. So I've been bringing it into novels, some more than others, throughout the entire series. Some novels bridge two different timelines or multiple timelines, and some are entirely historical novels. Mm-hmm. But so since I was bringing it into the books all along, it wasn't really a major transition for me to do standalone historical novels. It mm-hmm. might have felt that way to someone looking from the outside, but for me, it just flowed very naturally. It wasn't a big leap from one to the other.
Yeah, and that makes perfect sense. Well, tell us, what are some of your favorite historical novels, some of your favorite historical fiction, as well as nonfiction? I know that from all my quilting friends, and certainly everyone who's in sort of the quilt fiction communities, quilters are readers. And I know that they would love to hear the titles that have really fascinated you.
And you know, the overlap between quilters and librarians is not insignificant. There are a lot of quilter librarians out there. As far as my favorite works of historical nonfiction, really anything that helps me with my research, I'm all for it. You mentioned newspapers.com. That is an incredibly helpful resource for me for doing my historical research. So you know, really, it depends upon whatever book I'm researching. There are so many historical memoirs and biographies and all of that that I really do rely upon. Mm-hmm. I do read a lot of historical fiction, which probably won't surprise you. So if I'm thinking of a favorite, so of course the mind goes blank when I think of what are my favorite, because I have so many favorites. Two favorites that I can think of right now that I really enjoyed reading recently. They're not necessarily recent books, but they're ones that I've either read recently or they linger with me. One is The Women of the Copper Country, and it's by Mary Doria Russell, who is absolutely, hands down, one of my, perhaps my favorite historical novelist. Do yourself a favor and just go ahead and read all of her books. Okay. But this one is really fascinating because it's set in the UP, the Upper Peninsula of Michigan. And it's based upon a real woman. So it's a historical fixture, a historical figure. Her nickname was Big Annie because she was like 6 foot tall. And she was the leader of a coal miner strike in Upper Michigan. And she was a larger than life figure, both in real life and in historical fiction. And Mary Doria Russell just is a beautifully eloquent writer. So do yourself a favor, read that book, go and read that book. Like when we're done here, go and read that book.
Go
while you're waiting for my book to come out. And then I also really loved,
one more time. I'm sorry.
The Women of the Copper Country. It's somewhere behind me. You know what? Hold on just a second.
Okay.
Let me climb out of my little thing here. I'm going to go get it for you.
Okay.
Browse the shelf.
That's good. Visuals.
Browse the shelf. Here we go. I've got it right here. Here's one.
Excellent. Let's take a look.
Yes. Here we are. And here I squeeze back into my seat.
There you go.
So you can see here we go. Women of the Copper Country by Mary Doria Russell.
And you guys,
it's absolutely brilliant
in the show notes, so that you, yeah.
And I have to climb back into my little writer. I apologize for the awkwardness as I climb back into my chair. So I really, truly love this book. Highly recommend it.
Okay.
I'm not going to repeat that gymnastics event to get any more, but you can zoom in and you can see everything I have back there. And I also have another bookcase all over there too, but that's mostly my nonfiction and things like that. So this shelf behind me is my fiction and poetry and memoir.
And is this your
study? Tell I used to work in a library because it's organized. So I did that's proof that I used to work in a library. Another book that I read recently that I loved is The Whalebone Theater. I love that book.
I want to read.
And then another book that I read, I read this years ago, but it remains one of my favorites, was The Flight Portfolio. Julie Oringer is one of my favorite, and I hope Oringer. I'm like many readers. I know how to spell things better than I know how to pronounce them.
Yes.
You know, that's the thing of being a reader, is that you learn what the words are, but you never hear anybody say them. So maybe you don't know how to pronounce them quite so well. I remember at a very early age making my mother laugh hysterically when I said, "Wow, that's Facetious." And she laughed, and when she you know calmed down, she said, "Do you mean facetious?" And I was like, "I don't know. Do I mean facetious?" So anyway, my apologies to the author if I have mangled her last name. But The Flight Portfolio was wonderful. It was made into a miniseries recently, which is why I was thinking of it. But book was better. Almost always the book was better.
Yes.
So those are three to get started. I will probably think of others as soon as we finish. Oh, I should have mentioned this.
Yes.
I will tell you one book that I'm really looking forward to. And it will probably, I think it was published. Yes. But I've been waiting for it eagerly. I'm looking forward to James by Percival Everett.
Oh, me too.
I cannot wait for this book. I can't wait for it. Have you heard of it?
I have. It's been reviewed in the New York Times.
It's gotten some buzz. Yes. Yeah. And well deserved. First of all, Percival Everett is a brilliant writer. This book is a retelling of retelling and expanding on the story, the adventures of Huckleberry Finn, but it's from the perspective of Jim, the fugitive, formerly enslaved person. Yes. So I am looking forward to it. I know it's going to be brilliant. You can probably see a lot of Percival Everett books back there too, but this is one I'm really looking forward to it. And when I'm traveling on book tour, I'm going to pick it up from one of those wonderful independent bookstores that's going to be hosting me. So,
oh, good.
Probably the first one.
That's great that you're going on tour. And if you have a list, like I'll ask your publicist, yes, and we'll post it in the show notes so people can know where they can see you.
Yes, it'll all be on my website. They're all listed on my website, is jennifercavarini.com/events. But, or you could just go to my website and then click on the events link.
Can you pronounce
and it'll
your
have
last
all
name?
Of my
what is
well,
your,
there's some debate about that.
I'm sorry.
The Americanized version. Now see, I'm only Italian by marriage. So it wasn't, you know, this is the name I acquired when I married my husband. I'm actually a Neidenbach. So by birth, I'm a Neidenbach. Neidenbach, yes.
That's good.
So the American pronunciation is Chiaverini. However, when we went to Italy for the first time, just a few years ago, all of these Italians looked at us as if, you know, something was very, they were all very lovely people, don't get me wrong, but they all said, that's not how you say that. So the correct pronunciation is Chiaverini, yeah, like Chianti. The CH is pronounced. So I go, you know, I like to pronounce things correctly, and I'm not being fastidious here. I do like to pronounce things correctly. So the correct Italian pronunciation is Chiaverini.
Chiaverini.
I will answer to anything that is remotely close to any of those pronunciations. I am not going to judge you. You know, if I get the sense that someone is making an honest effort,
yes,
I'll go with it.
Okay.
You know?
And also it's been fun, I think, in communicating with your people. I feel like I now know how to spell Chiaverini. Chiaverini.
Well, that puts you ahead of 99.5% of the world.
Well, I feel good about that. I've practiced. All right, let's end up here because I've been for a long time, but I do want to hear what are you still quilting? I know that you are a quilter.
Oh, absolutely.
What are you working on?
Oh, absolutely. Well, what I'm working on now, it's probably going to be a long-term project. I have always liked to make the quilts from the novels, the quilts that my characters make. So I'm currently working on one of the quilts from the Museum of Lost Quilts. And I really wanted to have it ready to take on my book tour, but I've been so busy with, you know, life in general and writing novels, that it is going to turn out to be a longer term project than I had anticipated. However, I do have there are a lot of quilts in Summer's display. Mm-hmm. I have some of them made, just not all of them. So I'm continuing to work on some of the quilts that Summer has discovered in her historical research. But I don't want to say too much about them because I don't want there to be any spoilers for the novel.
Okay.
I have finished, I'm sorry?
Well, are you going to bring them on tour? Is that too much?
Some of them I will.
Good.
If I'm driving to the event, if I'm flying to the event, I won't be able to bring them. But I will have photos on my website, photos or illustrations, depending upon how far I get with my sewing process.
Well, I love that you do that. That's just, you know, it's a kind of, you're talking about alternate history, or it's a kind of world building to make those quilts that, you know, that your characters have made. So I think that's fabulous. Will you do, you have done quilting books in the past. Do you have plans to make
those?
Yes,
I have. Well, you know what? I would never say never. I have 7 quilt pattern books out. And I think my last one came out in late 2020. I think it was Harriet's Journey from Elm Creek Quilts.
Right.
So yeah, I don't know. We might be overdue for another pattern book. I don't know.
Because Summer, aka you, have written such in-depth histories of these quilts. I mean, they really, I mean, quilts have always been obviously important in the series, but there's some, you know, we know a lot about these quilts, and I could see people really being excited to make them. And it's another way of participating in these stories, which I think is what people are doing when they've started their own retreats or they've gotten their friends to, you know,
right.
You know, that is a kind
or
of
start and learn how to quilt.
Yeah. Yeah. And it is a kind of, I do think there's a, there, that there is the readers participate in the storytelling, right? And you put a book into the world.
Absolutely.
And they're in it with you, and they're imagining things and dressing, you know, creating sets and taking the details that you've given them and creating a world. Right. And so the idea of taking that another step forward and making the quilts, I think you should. So I'm going to put in a plug, and that I'd love to see.
So you're going to put in your vote.
I'm putting my vote.
Okay. So that's
vote.
One vote. Yes.
Yes. Yes. So tell your people. You've got
one vote for yes.
Okay. Yes. Well, so, thank you so much. This has been so delightful. And
thank you so much.
I love the book, and I think other people will. And I think that not just the people who are coming, because it's like, they're so happy to be back at Elm Creek Quilts, but also newcomers to the series. I think there'll be so much to enjoy that they will actually go back and start over and try to figure out timeline wise what's going on, but they'll enjoy every single bit of it.
Right.
So I really do.
I hope so.
Yeah, I think they will.
Well, and thank you for having me on your program and sharing the book with all of your readers and all of your fans. I really do appreciate it.
Yeah, well, I'm happy to do it. So, well, thank you, and have fun on your book tour, and hopefully our paths will cross again. Thanks so much, Jennifer.
I hope so.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I suspected that I would like Jennifer, but I had no idea what an absolute delight it would be to speak with her. I am really excited for you to read The Museum of Lost Quilts, and if you haven't gotten the message yet, pre-order. Obviously, The Museum of Lost Quilts is Quilt Fiction's Book of the Month. As for our Block of the Month, I've selected the Vintage Crosses and Losses. I thought about going with the Lost Ship Quilt Block, since it has the word lost in it, but the Crosses and Losses is a simpler block, and I like things simple. Anyway, it does have the word losses, and that's close to lost, and you see my logic here. In any event, I found the Crosses and Losses block via the Fresh Lemons quilt blog, and I will link to the tutorial there in the show notes. I also hope to do a how-to video, but I am a little bit behind on my how-to videos. My how-to videos were going to be a big part of 2024, but I got some teaching gigs, and the last 2 months have been sort of crazy with those and traveling, not to mention keeping up with a regular writing schedule. My hope is to get caught up in May. Fingers crossed. Speaking of May, this is a little bit of an aside, but an important one. For the May podcast, I will be interviewing Marie Bostwick, so be sure to tune in. Back to Crosses and Losses. Faith Jones of the Fresh Lemon Quilts website says she found the block in a Ladies Art Company catalog. I went looking for more info on the catalog and came across Connie Chun's, that's C-H-U-N-N, yeah, just N-N, her website, which is dedicated to the topic. And of course, I will link to that in the show notes. I want to share some info on the Ladies Art Catalog that I found there. And this is from renowned quilt historian Questa Binberry. The Ladies Art Company was established in 1889. It grew to be the most influential published source for the nomenclature of American patchwork quilt patterns. It was the first company to publish a catalog containing hundreds of quilt pattern blocks with a different name or title attributed to each design. So from what I can understand, you would get the catalog and you could buy patterns, you could buy kits, you could, I think you could actually even buy finished blocks and even finished quilts. So if you go to the quilt index into the ephemera section, which has a lot of really, really cool stuff, you can actually look at these catalogs, you can look at PDFs. And if you like to design your own quilts and are interested in traditional blocks, you know, it's a great resource. So I will try to remember to put a link in the show notes to that as well. So let's finish this month's episode up with a quick overview of what I have been reading. I just finished Anna Quinlan's new book, After Annie. Now, I like Anna Quinlan's novels a lot, although her last one, which if I recall correctly, was about rich New Yorkers feuding over parking spaces, was not my favorite. But I think if you like Quinlan in general, you'll enjoy After Annie. I did, although I do have a few quibbles with it. So here's the publisher's description. When Annie Brown dies suddenly, her husband, her children, and her closest friend are left to find a way forward without the woman who has been the linchpin of all of their lives. Bill is overwhelmed without his beloved wife, and Anne Marie wrestles with the bad habits her best friend had helped her overcome. And Allie, the eldest of Annie's children, has to grow up overnight to care for her younger brothers and even her father, and to puzzle out for herself many of the mysteries of adult life. Over the course of the next year, what saves them all is Annie, ever present in their minds, loving but not sentimental, caring but nobody's fool. A voice in their heads that is funny and sharp and remarkably clear. The power she has given to those who loved her is the power to go on without her. The lesson they learn is that no one beloved is ever truly gone. Okay, so the story is told from three points of view: husband Bill's, best friend Anne Marie's, and 13-year-old daughter's Allie, who is Annie's oldest child. Allie is my favorite character, though at times she seems a little old for her age, a little wise. And I think as someone who writes children's fiction, that's something I'm particularly aware of, because that is something my editor will say about some of my characters on occasion. It's like, this sounds a bit adult to me, she will write on the margins. And if I had been writing on the margins of this novel, there were places where I'd be like, this sounds a little bit adult to me. But she's all the same. She is a great character, and I really love spending time with her. I like Bill, too, and I found him very sympathetic. But I never warmed to Annie's best friend, Anne Marie. From the beginning, she struck me as unlikable. And there were a couple times when I thought, I don't think I'm going to finish this book. But then I would kind of finish an Anne Marie section and get back to Allie or Bill. And then I was like, oh, okay, I'll keep reading. One of the oddest things about the book, as it feels like the story takes place in 1979 instead of now, but there are enough mentions of iPhones and texting to let you know that it is supposed to be contemporary. Having said all of that, I will say there's really a lot that I like about the book. And as I said earlier, if you're a Quinlan fan, you should definitely give this one a read, though I would say check it out from the library instead of buying it. If you are new to Quinlan, before you try After Annie, I would recommend Still Life with Breadcrumbs or Miller's Valley or really kind of any of her other books, except for that one about the parking situation. I read different books at different times of day, and my current morning book right now, that's redundant. My current morning book is called Word from Wormingford. I have a really hard time saying Wormingford, and I might not even be saying that right. Word from Wormingford, A Parish Year by Ronald Blythe. So Blythe was an English writer. He died last year at the age of 100, who lived in a rural area near Sussex. And the publisher's description of Word from Wormingford, Ford, reads simply, an illustrated collection of the author's regular weekly column on the back page of the Church Times, where, with a poet's eye, he observes the comings and goings of the rural world he sees from his ancient farmhouse in Constable country. When I first started reading the book, I thought Blythe was an Anglican priest, but that is not the case. He was a lay reader and a lay canon, that's C-A-N-O-N, which meant that he had an active role in the running of two local churches, but he was not actually ordained. The short essays in this book follow the church calendar beginning in Advent, and they originally appeared, as the description says, in the Church Times, which is an Anglican weekly newspaper. It is a lovely way to start the day. Blythe was a wonderful, wonderful writer. He is funny, not laugh out loud, uproariously funny, but just gently funny. He's not particularly sentimental, but he has an excellent eye, and he clearly loves where he lives and loves the people where he lives. And it's such a nice way to start the day. I've just started The Enchanted April by Elizabeth von Arnim, which is the book for the May meeting of the Quilt Fiction Club's 1930s Book Club. As you've heard me say before, the Quilt Fiction Club is a private Facebook group, and the book club reads books from the 1930s and earlier. You are welcome to join us. If you're not on Facebook but would like to be part of the group, just let me know and I'll send you the Zoom link for our next meeting, which is Monday, May 5th. So it's a lot of fun. It's a small group. It's a very warm and welcoming group. You are very much welcome to join us. So that is it for this month's episode. Thank you so much to the wonderful Jennifer Cheverini for joining us, and a big thanks to String and Story for sponsoring us. Do not forget to enter this month's giveaway. All you have to do is go to quiltfiction.com. The entry form is on the front page. Thank you so much for listening. We'll see you next month when we'll be talking with the marvelous, the wonderful Marie Bostwick. See you then. Bye for now.